Well, well, well. Some things are so beautiful, you have to run them twice. And I got a beautiful note from someone yesterday asking about this very piece of music. And, of course, I'm responding. But before we go any further, why don't you help me welcome our guest? We will hear him shortly after we get some advice that he was dispensing way back and how you get involved, how you get people involved in struggle. Here he is, and I'll tell you who he is right after we hear him.
You got to learn how to build a group of people. You start with a few, and then you get your message out there. Let them know that you're willing to stand up for what's right. See, like I tell my people, if they call me, they can call me, you can call me. If you call me, I'm coming. It don't make no difference where you at. You can be in Mexico. If you need my help, I'll be there. That's a promise, not a say-so. And let me get back to it, because I know I'm jumping around, because I know we don't have much time, but this is so important that people need to understand. You see, grassroots is more than that. And when you're talking about democracy, how do you get democracy? You know? It got to come from us, the people. It got to come. There is no other option. See, these politicians and folks, they supposed to be working for us to help us deal with these corporations. You see, the corporation out, they got 374 billionaires here in the United States. 374. And here we are fighting for little jobs. We got people who don't even have water in Michigan. There's over 45,000 people who don't even have water. In Detroit and in Benton Harbor, we got so many people who don't have water, don't have lights. We got more homeless people. We only 12,000 strong. We got more homeless people living in Benton Harbor than you would ever imagine, living underneath the bridge. That's what I be fighting for. This is what we be trying to pull people in. It's important, but we have to do it together. We can't do it as an individual. That's what I tell everybody. See, it's not just me. See, people are so convinced it's me. Well, they won't. No, it's us. We're a team. There's no I in nothing I do. It's we. It's we. And even the elected, Pinckney was involved. Pinckney did. It wasn't just Pinckney. It had to be other people. I can't win no election by myself. I'm only one vote. That's what they said, but they was convinced. But this is why we have to stick together. And when you leave here today, you need to take back with you, if we can beat down Whirlpool, you can beat down anybody. That's right. Yeah.
Well, that voice belongs to the Reverend Edward Pinckney. And several years ago, that was a tape from, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, when he was instructing people on building democracy from the local level on up. And Reverend Pinckney, I want to welcome you to this program today and to thank you for giving us of your time today.
I want to thank you for having me on your program. I tell you, it's an honor and a privilege just to be talking to you.
Not at all. Well, let's let some people in on what it is this program is today. When I talked with you yesterday, you told me you were under house arrest until May the 16th, when there will be a hearing, and that you are up to your eyeballs in a local fight, you and the people of Benton Harbor. So let's start with, where is Benton Harbor and why are you under house arrest?
Okay, well, let's say Benton Harbor is about 75 miles from Chicago, Illinois. It's about 179 miles from Detroit. It's about 45 miles from South Bend, 80 miles from Grand Rapids, and about 40 miles from Kalamazoo. So we're right there where we need to be. It's a beautiful, we're in a beautiful situation, a situation where we can win. And let me talk a little bit about the situation I'm in today. Nobody in their right mind would believe that something like this could happen here in America. And you know how Don King said, only in America. I have to agree with that. Well, anyway, on last Thursday, April 24th, my wife, it was her birthday. And, you know, we're talking all morning about celebrating. I'm taking her out to dinner, an early dinner, and just have a wonderful day. We're going to go up to Kalamazoo and have dinner and maybe take in a movie or two. Just do some things. Go shopping. So here's the deal. I'm leaving here at exactly 11:30 because I'm a very, very timely person. If I say 11:30, I mean 11:30. I don't mean 11:32, 11:33. I mean 11:30. So at 11:29, I'm in the car. And my wife, for the first time in history, she came out on time. She gets in the car. We drive off. But before I can get to Kalamazoo, Michigan, my phone is jumping like mad. They tell me that my house is being surrounded by law enforcement. They said they had, now listen to this, they had the FBI, the sheriff department, the township police, the city police, and the state police. We talking 35 to maybe 40 people, law enforcement officers, had my house completely surrounded. They had the SWAT team here. They had the streets blocked off. I say it was martial law because you can't get out of your house. You can't go in your house. And they had all the streets blocked off. Nobody can come in and out. And when they was telling me this, I was in total shock. I said, I can't believe it. I said, what are they doing now? They said, they're walking around your house. I said, walking around? They said they look like it's the army or something. And they said, they're over in the, we got across from my house, we have the apartment building. They said, they're all behind these posters with their rifles. I said, shut up. I said, okay. So me and my wife, we finish our dinner. Very calmly, finished the dinner. So I said, well, let's go to the attorney office and talk to him about this. So I go to the attorney office, and he tells me, he calls the prosecutor, Michael Sepik, and he says, Mike, I see you harassing Reverend Pinckney again. They say, yes, we have a warrant for his arrest. And he said, well, what for? Well, five felonies. It appears that he changed the date on the recall petition. He said, those are five-year felonies. He could get up to 25 years in jail. And my attorney said, for changing a date on a petition? He said, that doesn't sound right. So he said, I tell you what, we'll bring him in Monday. He said, no, sir. I want Reverend Pinckney right now. And we're going to get him. We're going to make sure that we get him. And look, and all day and all night long, they driving all over Benton Harbor. The SWAT team, the police officers got the whole city cornered up and running. Remember this. The city is only 4.4 square miles. So you got a SWAT team, all these police cars, trying to find me. They had my house staked out. They had everything you think. They was in the back of my house. They was in the front of my house. They was on the side of my house. They was at the school. And I said, okay. So here's what we do. The very next morning, I go and turn myself in. You know, they was very hospitable. They gave us an escort in, which was, you know, you expect that. They escorted me in. Like, you know, I felt like I was maybe the president or something. That, you know, got cars like that, flashing lights, you know. I said, wow, I must be really important. So I gets into the courtroom. The judge, he gets to be a little nasty now. He said, well, we finally got you. Well, you just had the warrant out yesterday. So in the newspaper, they said a big headline, Sheriff's Department can't find Pinckney, you know. So I goes in there, the judge said, well, he's we gotta make sure that he don't leave his house. We're gonna have bond set at $30,000 cash. I say, well, they only signatures. He said, yeah, but we want $30,000 for you, or you're gonna stay in jail. But it was fortunate for me, I had made arrangement with the bondsman to make sure I get out. So here we go. Then he says, you're gonna be on the house arrest 24/7. Matter of fact, you can't go out. If you have to go out, you can't go out. And he said, not only that, you can't even use a computer. He said, I do not want you using a computer. If you found using a computer, you'll be in violation, and you out of here. So knowing me, you know, I said, okay. So I go set. I get myself out of jail. We go in, and here they go. Before I can get home, three or four cars around my house, watching me, and I'm on the house arrest with a tether. So every day, like just a few minutes ago, one just left here. Every day they come over here and check up on me. So, you know, just it's a sign of intimidation more than anything, but you can't intimidate a guy like me. I'm not easily intimidated.
What is
so
on,
that what
is
that was
metal,
all about. And remember this, it was the recall.
Reverend Pinckney, what is the issue with these signatures, and what is this in reference to?
This is reference to the recall of James, Mayor James Hightower, who is a corporate man. He works for the corporations against the people. So we had to recall him. There was no other option for us to do this. But here's the deal. We got the senior PGA coming here May 24th.
That's Professional Golf Association.
Right. And they didn't want a Muslim mayor here. This young man, he goes under the name Marcus Muhammad. And they didn't want him to be the mayor during the senior PGA. So they decided that they were going to figure out a way how to stop this. Like, but look, it gets deeper than this. The mayor went out and manufactured evidence to start this investigation. I'm pretty sure that the sheriff's department told him what to do and what to say. And it's amazing. If you got a minute, I'd like to read to you what the mayor went out and did. It's real simple. It says here, I am asking that my name be withdrawn from the petition regarding the recall of Mayor James Hightower. It says, deception was used, and the petition was misrepresented by the person that gave me the petition to sign. I was told it was to receive taxes from Whirlpool. Again, please remove my name from this petition. I was given false information before signing. And he had the same identical words. He had four people to sign it. And they had to know something was wrong with that. You see, but they didn't care long as they got the information. But here's what I did today. I typed up something and sent it to the prosecutor, sent it to the judge, sent it to the Justice Department, sent it to the Attorney General, and sent it to the Civil Rights Division. And so they can all see with that information I got there what's really going on, and see what their next move is, because it is important that people understand you have to learn to fight back. You know, you have to learn to do this whether you like it or not.
Now, you were a part of this recall movement to recall the mayor. This is James Hightower.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Was it successful? Obviously it was.
Yeah, absolutely. It was successful.
So you successfully recalled the mayor.
And that's what started the sheriff's department and everybody had put them in motion. Matter of fact, we had more than enough signatures to recall him. And once you get the signature, he's automatically recalled and got to run an election. So he was running up against Marcus Muhammad. And Marcus Muhammad was winning 5 votes to 1. And they were not going to have that. See, that's how the power to be operates.
Now, let's talk about the they. Who are the they?
They'll pull a rabbit out of their hat to neutralize you.
Now, who are the they, Reverend Pinckney?
We're talking about Whirlpool Corporation.
Explain.
When we talk about Whirlpool, they control everything in this community. You see, they even have a monopoly on the washer and dryers. They have a monopoly on the stove and refrigerator. Everything that goes on in this community goes through Whirlpool. You can't do nothing without them. Here's something that was so incredible. 8 years ago, they bought the rights to Underneath the Ground in the city of Bentonhouse. Make that 10 years ago. And everybody, they were thinking that they had finally got Whirlpool. Whirlpool bought the rights. That means that you can't run no computer lines. You can't even run telephone lines, gas lines through there unless you go through Whirlpool. It's worth over $10 million a day. They paid $50,000 to the city of Benton Harbor, and now we're looking like real suckers now. So that's what Whirlpool. Whirlpool controls everything. They gentrify in the community. We also have a designer, Jack Nicklaus, signature golf course, surrounded by $500,000 condominiums. And they're supposed to be built for the people in Benton Harbor. Now, remember, the people in Benton Harbor is 94% African American. You got 70% of the people unemployed. You got 90% of the people living below the poverty level. And now they went out and built a designer golf course that costs almost $10,000 to become a member. And the average income here is about $12,000. So who is that golf course really for? Gay is.
Now, what is of what use or what interest does Whirlpool have in your little town, which went from 45,000 residents now to a mere 10,000 residents? What is the interest by Whirlpool in Benton Harbor?
Well, they got their international headquarters here. And what they want to do, they are attempting to drive the people completely out of the community, the African American. Gentrification is here and is running rapid here in the city of Benton Harbor. They only have one goal. Because we're surrounded by water, we have what you call a designer beach, you see, that most cities don't have. And we're surrounded by water on three sides. So they want to be close to that water, and they're willing to be close to that water at all costs, even if it means destroying the residents that live inside this city. So that's really what they're shooting for. And so far, we have slowed them down a little bit. Matter of fact, we called for an international boycott of all Whirlpool products. That was in 2008. At that time, they had a negative credit rating after they heard about the boycott. They were just one step from being junk stock. But then again, you got Fred Upton. He's a U.S. representative. You know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, anyway, he's the heir to Whirlpool, and he's a United States representative, and it pulled another rabbit out of the hat. They got these things now with energy, where they got a half a billion dollars in surplus from the, well, they call them credit, but it's tax credit that they get every time you buy a washer, dryer, stove, refrigerator. They give the person $50, and that goes into their kitty. So they build up a fund that way, and that's how they got to be where they are. But we're battling them. We're not sitting down saying it's okay, because it's not okay.
Well, Fred Upton happens to chair the Energy and Commerce Committee.
Right, and he's the one came up with the scheme.
How had they been so successful? I mean, you have a local, you do have a local government of sorts. You have local representation. How was this able to progress to this level?
Well, one of the things, Whirlpool always controlled our government until recently, when we received an emergency manager, just like in Detroit. You see, when we talk about emergency manager, they got 172 emergency managers already trained that go all over the United States now. They started with Benton Harbor, Michigan. We were the first one on the Public Act 4. There was others on the Public Act 72, but we was on the Public Act 4, where they gave the emergency manager, who was appointed by the governor, exceptional power. And let me say this. When the emergency manager first came to the city of Benton Harbor, he had to show his power. One of the things he did, he took the mayor. We had a decent mayor then. We had a good mayor, a mayor who was for the people. He took his desk, his beautiful oak desk, and put it in the basement and told him, I'm in charge. Then he told the elected officials, the commissioners, eight of them, that he's changing the locks on the door and there's nothing they can do about it. But they really didn't mind about him changing the locks and taking the keys. But they did mind when he said he's going to take their cell phones. Now, one thing we all know, you can't take a black person's cell phone. You take that cell phone, you in for a fight for your life. So now they want to join me in the fight for their life. You see, don't take their cell phone, whatever you do. And now they have joined sides with me. At that time, we had seven commissioners that was on my side. And that's what happened. And here's the thing. He told them, this is what the emergency manager told them. He said, you can have a meeting, you can take notes, then you have to adjourn the meeting. You can't vote on nothing. You can't, matter of fact, if you know anything, it's because I let you know it. And if you vote on something, I don't like it, I'm going to reject it. So my advice to you, don't vote on nothing. This is what the emergency manager does. This is what the emergency manager do.
I wanted to bring that to the listeners' attention. We've been doing stories and following very closely the forced bankruptcy of Detroit. But your city, your town, was the first test case of a state takeover of an almost all-black town or city, the imposition by the governor of an emergency manager. And when you were talking about Whirlpool and the changes and the golf course and the multimillion-dollar condos and so forth, the redesigning of this very valuable piece of real estate that has been allowed to deteriorate because they did not provide the city services for upkeep and so forth, and with the loss of population, you had a loss of a tax base. So now Benton Harbor, like Detroit, is very, very much open to anybody coming in who has money and power and influence to just literally empty the town, take it over, and completely redesign it, because now Benton Harbor being on the water, as you have suggested, is a very valuable piece of real estate to have.
Absolutely. And remember this, Detroit is on the water too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's what they did to Detroit. They brought in this guy named Kevin Orr. Now, here's the connection. Fred Upton, Kevin Orr, and Governor Snyder. Snyder is a little bit younger than Upton. Kevin Orr is a little bit younger than Upton because I think he was a senior and they was freshmen, but they was friends in college. They went to the University of Michigan. So they have a connection there. Fred Upton, Governor Snyder, and you got Kevin Orr, all them. And here's what they did to the city of Detroit. The city of Detroit is not really financially destroyed. They have a lot of assets, and they know that. You got the Chinese in Detroit now buying up blocks. You got the guy from the Quicken Loan that owned the Cleveland Cavaliers. Dan, I can't think of his name right off the top of my head, but he's buying up. They buy. See, sometimes you buy a building and a house. They buying blocks up, and they're doing it dirt cheap. They got an art collection there. Were billions of dollars. They were trying to option off the even all the art. But Detroit is going to come back. It's going to come back stronger than ever. My only issue is, will it come back with the people of color in the communities? That's my biggest concern about Detroit. I know how they operate. They tried to take the taxes right now, the pension, the city pension away from the people right now, which they're going to be able to cut that. See, that's another poor they use. They're going to cut that pension in half, and they're going to save billions of dollars. So we got major issues, believe me.
Now, one of the things that somebody would say looking at the struggle, and it's been years now that you've been locked in this struggle to essentially save the city of Benton Harbor, one would say that this is a civil rights struggle. You come out of that tradition.
I think it's bigger than a civil rights struggle.
But you would say that, for example, you would naturally attract the interest of civil rights organizations that are typical, like the NAACP and the Urban League and so forth. What has the response been from these organizations?
They have been silent, and they will, because remember, the NAACP and the Urban League and those different places, they get money from corporations. That's what keeps them. That's why they don't fight for civil rights anymore. I used to be the president of the NAACP here in the city of Benton Harbor. And what I used to do, I used to go picket Whirlpool. They used to tell me that you couldn't have a direct action. In other words, don't mess with my money. So Whirlpool took a crew down to the state president and told the state president that Whirlpool wanted to support the NAACP, but they would not support the NAACP under my leadership. So if you want this money that we want to give you, you got to get rid of Pinckney. And we don't care how you do it. They came up with all kind of ideas. First thing they came up with, that we haven't had a meeting. And we always have meetings, and we had the minutes for it. So that neutralized them. Then they said we didn't have an election. That neutralized them. Then they tried to sneak and have an election without my people knowing, because we only had 175, I think, people. They, Whirlpool went out and purchased 300 memberships. 300 memberships. The only criteria was that they vote against Reverend Pinckney and you get a free membership. And then they even thought that that might backfire. So what they did, they had two armed police officers there, made sure I didn't come to the election at all. So what they did, when I talk about the NAACP and the corporations, I got firsthand knowledge about them. So I can say that about the NAACP. I can say that about the Urban League. I can say that about Operation Push. I can say these things because, like I said, I know what they do. But anyway, back to Detroit. You cannot get any of these organizations to come out and speak about the emergency manager. They won't do it. They might say something, a word or two, or here's one thing we did. We went out and got over 226,000 signatures to repeal Public Act 4. And we worked all summer long. 226,000. And here's what happened. On the day we turned them in Lansing, that's the capital, the NAACP shows up and asked to carry a box in, knowing that they have not done any work at all. They wanted to come in, and as the news media was there, as we were bringing them in, they wanted to have a box in their hand, and then that's what the news media pictured. They took a picture of them with a box of the recall petitions, the petitions, and like they've been with us all along. That's how they operate.
So basically, what is the position of the NAACP now in your town?
It's non-existence. It doesn't even exist. Matter of fact, they don't even have enough members because they didn't renew, Whirlpool didn't renew their membership. They don't have enough members now to even have a meeting. They don't even have a quorum. There's about eight of them.
I want to open up the phone lines very shortly, but at 888-874-4888. But Reverend Pinckney, I want to ask you, you have a date looming ahead of you on May the 16th.
And it's beyond that,
you have a major fight on your hands beyond that. What are your priorities now?
Well, my priorities right now is to win this battle in court. I'm not going to say I believe. I know we're going to win. We're going to go in there, and we're going to do the things that need to be done and win this battle. Then we're going to come back and fight the battle right in the streets where it should be fought, right in the streets. If it takes hand-to-hand combat, whatever it takes, we're prepared mentally to deal with it because we know that we got a real challenge here in the city of Benton Harbor, and it's not just here in Benton Harbor, it's all over the state, it's all over the country. Same flavor.
All right. 888-874-4888. And Reverend Pinckney, how can people help you?
Well, here's what they can do. You can go to my website or my blog, which is bhbanco.org. That's BANCO.org. BHBanco.org, or you can call me at 269-925-0001. That's 269-925-0001, or you can mail me a check to Banco, B-A-N-C-O, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. That's Banco, B-A-N-C-O, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022.
You know, I have to say, this is a very upsetting story, but it is duplicated, and you're correct about that, in so many cities across the country. We, as I said, we've been following the situation in Detroit for some time now, since last July. And, of course, we see all these similarities. One can't help but wonder, how is it that the leadership is so awful? I mean, just absolutely, it has reached a point of treachery, just open warfare against the people it's supposed to be helping. When you look at a city like Benton Harbor, where you say that you have a 70% unemployment rate, and 90% of the people living at or below the U.S. poverty level. And yet, there is an unrelenting pressure to just get people either so fed up that they leave or so dispossessed that they, in fact, leave. And this is being repeated over and over and over again. And we don't seem to have a coordinated effort at all to get people to understand what is happening. And beyond that, even at the local level, we have the same faces showing up in the same places all the time, the same people doing the work. So what has happened to this thing that we called community activism?
Well, here's the most important thing, is the intimidation factor. Example, when I got arrested, even some of the people part of our organization was so afraid that they was going to come after them too because they came after me. What I do, I try to motivate them and tell them that it's not about you. It's about the future of our children. See, one thing I know this for a fact, you will stand up for your children. You know, I don't care what it is, what the situation called for, you will do that, especially if you're out here. So my level of motivating these people is not to talk about Reverend Pinckney, not to talk about them. Talk about their children, because you're willing to sacrifice for your children. You may not be willing to sacrifice for Reverend Pinckney, but you will sacrifice for your children. So that's what I try to tell people, and this is what they do. What they do, they terrorize the people. See, what they did to me with that, with the SWAT team, that was basically a terrorist attack. That's what it was. It scared the community. You see, my phone, you know, was jumping up and down like it was. These people calling from everywhere, and they're scared. That scared them to death, but it didn't scare me. You see, because I figure like this, you got something for me, bring it on. I would be a poor leader if I allowed them to intimidate me on that level. And that's what they do, you see. So we have to train the people, teach the people, make them understand it's not about you. If it's all about you, we'll never get nothing done. So, you know, basically that's it.
The new mayor, or the soon-to-be new mayor, what is happening there? Has an official change of shift, has an official change of command taken place?
Well, you know, it's like this. They, you know, they grooming him. You know, he like we had a parade on Saturday. You know, they had him in the parade. Whirlpool have him, you know, have him out for lunch. You know, stuff like that. So they getting him prepared for May 24th, when the senior golfers get here and things like that. They're preparing him. You see, but here, you know, like I told you earlier, that, you know, I'm going to file a criminal complaint against him, and let's see what they do with that criminal complaint, because we know that he manufactured the evidence for the investigation. So we'll see how far they'll go on that end, because to me that's important. You know, first of all, you instructed justice. Two, you cannot manufacture evidence, and that's about four counts of that. So let's see where they're going to go with that. Those are four felonies. Let's see how they deal with it. Then we'll know something. Next time we talk, I'll be able to explain exactly what they did, because it was presented today to the prosecutor and a judge.
And that's the incumbent mayor, for lack of a better term, and that is James Hamilton. Okay. What about the mayor who is tabbed to take his place?
No. He won't be the one who wanted to take his place was Marcus Muhammad. He will not be taking his place until the election. We have another election in 2015, November 2015. And at that time, we'll be ready to move forward.
In Benton Harbor, has there been, like it has been in Detroit, has there been a lot of abandonment of homes and foreclosures as well?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, per capita, we probably have more foreclosures than Detroit have. We have more abandoned houses than Detroit have, and because of the property level. And you can't go to court here and argue about foreclosure here, because here you automatically lose, you see. And what they want to do, they want to make sure that they get you out. Yeah, we have, when you talk about abandoned homes, I think per capita, we outslugged Detroit on that.
My goodness. So you talked in your opening statement that we played, you talked about people literally living under bridges in Benton Harbor. Is that situation still persisting?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, you know, with all the abandoned houses, they should allow the people to live in the abandoned houses. But they won't do that. If they catch you in the abandoned houses, they're going to arrest you and charge you with trespassing. And that's what they've been doing. They've been busting in like gangbusters. You know, they come from all angles, bust in the house, arrest you, take you to jail, you know, and that's where you stay. You can't stay because you can't afford a lawyer. You can't bond out. So what you do? You just have to stay in jail. So we have homeless. Man, here's another thing. If you're homeless, let's say you can't even stand on the corner. You can't even sit on the bench. If you sit on the bench and they just say you fall asleep, they will come and arrest you. If you're in the library, now this is, I never heard, if you're in the library, if you don't have a book in front of you, you can't stay in the library. Never heard of that before. But, you know, only in America.
Has this situation in Benton Harbor, Reverend Pinckney, has it come to the attention of any group or organization at the national level that might be in a position to help you very strategically in achieving your goals and objectives?
Well, you know, there are several groups that have came out. Matter of fact, Danny Glover came here to help us. He heard about the struggle, and he came in October. And matter of fact, I was on the phone with his staff yesterday, and he talked. Well, I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but like he was saying that he's in the process of they're doing a movie right now. And but before the week is out, he will be calling me, and we're gonna learn. We're gonna strategize. Also, the Crossroad Women, out of there, you know, they're international, and they're going to be we're going to be connecting with them. And there's several little groups that we're going to be dealing with, the People Tribune, different things like that. We're going to be doing, connecting, and we're trying to connect all across the country. And, David Cobb from, MoveOn.org. You might know him.
Well, I don't know him personally, but I know who he is.
You heard about, and then you got Jill Stein. She's, you know, we you know, she, we're connected with her too. So, the Green Party, they will connect with them too. So we're kind of like connected, but we're throwing the rope out there and let's see who grabs it. That's the most important thing.
I was very, it was very interesting to when I went to your website to see a whole range of people. This isn't just from the protesters that I saw. It's not just an African American group. There are many, many people across all racial and ethnic backgrounds who have taken an interest in this particular struggle.
Absolutely. And matter of fact, this is what I tell everybody. It's not all about black people. It's not all about brown people. It's not all about yellow people. It's not all about white people. It's about all of us. And that's the way we fight. The way they keep defeating us is they keep us divided. Division is their weapon that they use on us. And we accept it. See, that's the bad part. When you accept it, what you're doing, you're playing into what they're trying to accomplish. See, we don't understand how important it is to stand together. Whatever your issue is my issue. If you call me, I gotta come. I cannot sit here and say I can't come. You say, well, I got a problem. Okay, let me figure out a way how I'm gonna get there. And then we work it out. But everybody should be coming together, fighting this monster and showing them what we can do if we come together. See, they know that, and here's another thing. Most of the time, you don't have the resources to fight. That's, you know, one of the things that I do when I go out on speaking engagement, I don't take money from people. If they take care of my hotel and all that kind of stuff, I'm more than happy. And I go across the country. But I don't try to do things. I don't do things for money. I do things because it's the right thing to do. Even though I might need money, but the point is, we have to learn to stand together and fight at all costs. That's what it's all about. Until we learn to do that, all we're doing is spinning our wheels.
Well, you did say to me that I did hear the word burn in connection with NAACP.
Absolutely, with the NAACP, and it's which was a beautiful thing. After I took him to court and sued him, and I decided that I didn't want to be part of them no more, and I ran a campaign of burning your NAACP card, where we got more than 10,000 people to burn the NAACP card, and we labeled it Burn Baby Burn. Burn Baby Burn. That's where we was at. We made sure they understood that we're serious. And it's important. It shows what people can do if you work together. We can do some incredible things, but we got to learn to work together.
Well, Reverend Pinckney, this has been a very enlightening conversation with you to get us to know a little bit more about Benton Harbor and the struggle there, but more so to get to know that in the midst of all of that, there are people like you and many others, I'm sure, who have decided that they will stick to it and fight back in order to, as I said, it's not for you, you're correct about that, but it's for those who are to come behind you. And these days, that's a very unattractive thing. People don't like doing that kind of work. It is very unattractive. It's very unsexy. It doesn't get, you know, the warmth of the television lights and the news headlines very often. But it is a kind of work that, had it not been done, most of us would not be where we are today.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you so much for your time. I wish you well in your upcoming court date. And, of course, we'll be following your story.
I appreciate that. Also, the court date is May 30th now at 8:30 in the morning in St. Joseph, Michigan. And so that's, I want to get that out. It's not the 16th anymore. It's 8:30.
All right. We will be checking with you. And thanks again for being with us today.
And thank you so much for having me.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that was a very interesting conversation from many perspectives. And we're seeing patterns like this develop all over the country where the effort, I mean, there's no thought or hesitation about it. People just decide that, you know what, we're going to take this town over. It's beautifully situated, nothing but a bunch of poor and working class people anyway. You know, we could either buy them out or force them out. But we like this property and we like this location, and we're just going to take it. And they proceed with their plan by co-opting the local leadership. And this is directly related to the NAACP, as has happened in Benton Harbor. Rather than championing the rights of the people, they decided to conspire with the corporation to just dominate this town. And this is a very disturbing pattern. We saw it again in the NBA story, where the NAACP chapter president, who has since resigned, decided that for a measly $45,000 over a period of about 5 or 6 years, which tells you that the NBA was being especially generous, but for that amount of money, the NAACP was willing to confer upon Donald Sterling not just one lifetime award, but a second one. Had it not been outed, it probably might have gone through. We see these patterns in terms of leadership just deciding that if it is in their interest to take another route that is completely the opposite of what people want them to do, they will do just that. And then we also hear this very disappointing story again, that in many community struggles, it is the same people who for many, many years are doing the work. The rest of the folks are saying, well, you know, it's not really my problem. Or even if it's my problem, somebody else will fix it. But there comes a time when you have to take a stand and you really have to examine your conscience about what is it do you think you owe to future generations? What do you owe beyond yourself? And that's a story we heard today from Reverend Pinckney. I hope it was enlightening, the correlation between Benton Harbor and what we have been hearing about Detroit and what is happening in Philadelphia, what is happening in Washington, D.C., what is happening in Trenton, New Jersey, and in New York City, and in many major cities across the nation. It's the same pattern. I'm hoping that that served as a kind of enlightenment, a kind of encouragement, and we certainly will be following up on that story. I just wanted to say a nice little hello to a listener who had written me just yesterday and asked about the music, and for that we played a Sonny Stitt once more, because it really was apparently very, very pleasant to hear, according to the listener, she says. Why don't you just post your music along with the synopses of your programs? And I think it's a great suggestion. I'll take her up on that. But I hope you remember that I paid attention to your observation yesterday and here today, Sonny Stitt. I want to thank you very much, all of you, for being so incredibly generous with your opinions and your ideas, and the frankness with which you communicate is really wonderful. I want to encourage that level of communication at all times because, you know, we will be pretending about doing community work or having a level of consciousness if we just, you know, deal with each other superficially. It's great to be sharing thoughts that people may or may not like, but it is important for them to hear and to engage in discussion at that level. So I want to thank you for that. The person, I'm trying to remember her name, who wrote me that beautiful little note yesterday, Anna Hernandez, that's you. So that music was for you today. What else do I want to talk about? Please do write. I love getting your notes and your letters. I try to respond as quickly as possible at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. Stay tuned. Of course, coming up next is Jack Rasmus with Alternative Visions. And I'm delighted to have been in your company today. It was great to have you along for the ride. And so listen, we just had to listen to Reverend Pinckney tell his story in his own words. And you get the raw power of when people are very sincere about what they do, you know, you get that sense immediately about the fact that they care a great deal about their communities. So thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow, of course, another great program in store for you. Take care.